This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. It doesn't matter how slick your software is or how beautiful and robust a display may be. If the content on a digital sign doesn't attract attention and hold it, at least for a bit. So tools that help track and analyze how people view advertising, packaging, and other marketing messages can be incredibly valuable. But they can also be clunky, expensive, and slow. A startup called iTrack is trying to change that, using artificial intelligence and computer vision to do predictive modeling on how people will consume specific pieces of campaign creative, where they're going to look, what they'll notice first, and how long they look. Creatives and media planners can use iTrack's tools or send the material to iTrack to develop the model and insights. Right now, the first iteration is built around static out-of-home street furniture posters and other non-motion creative. But iTrack is working on the same sort of tool for motion digital assets. That would allow network media owners, agencies, and brands to pre-select the best combinations of creative for a location in a matter of minutes and cut their costs dramatically. I spoke with UK-based CEO David Bailey about a cloud-based service he says gives creatives superpowers. David, thank you for joining me. Can you give me the elevator pitch on what iTrack is all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So iTrack uses machine learning, artificial intelligence to help brands, retailers, and advertisers optimize the visual impact of their designs, packaging, advertising, storefronts, etc.
And how does that work?
So we're doing something called predictive eye tracking based on a very large data set, proprietary data set that we have. So what we've done is we've gone out and collected thousands of images which are very specific to retail. So apparel, FMCG, consumer electronics, packaging, storefronts, advertising. Our founding team has a number of experienced retail people like myself, so we have very large libraries of these things already ourselves. And with that kind of context-specific library of images, we've been off and have done a massive eye-tracking study, and we're continuing to do it every month more and more. So we've got, you know, a £20,000 eye-tracking camera, which sits on a desk. We get real people to come in, real participants. They come in and they look at all of the images. And what we're doing is we're interested in the first 3 or 4 seconds of vision. So in scientific terms, it's called pre-attentive vision. And it's this subconscious phase of vision where there's too much going on. So your brain just tunes into visually salient items, eye-catching items. You know, and this is hundreds, thousands, millions of years of evolution of how the brain works in this way. It just happens subconsciously all the time. So what we did in our eye-tracking studies is we focused on those first couple of seconds. We collected all of that data very rigorously, high quality, very consistently. And that became the data that we used to train our own neural network. So what we can do now is take an image, a photograph of a storefront, creative design, packaging designs. We can upload it into iTrack, our tool. And within a minute, you get back the same results as a traditional eye-tracking study, but a fraction of the time and a fraction of the cost, because traditional eye tracking studies are, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 upwards.
So you're still using very traditional techniques. You're just accelerating it using machine learning.
Yes. And in the past, some people have tried to do this kind of predictive eye tracking, but they've done it in a very kind of programmed way. They've had somebody program an algorithm to try and guess, to try and understand what people look at, and you end up with something that looks a bit like a Photoshop filter, and it's not very accurate. What we've done, which is quite revolutionary, is, you know, the combination of skill sets within our founding team, which I'll come to in a minute, means that we've got the machine learning expertise, the computer vision expertise, the retail and the marketing experience expertise. And it's that full stack together that has ended up with a product that is very clever, very useful. And, you know, my previous time, I worked at Apple for 10 years doing retail development. I was head of marketing for Samsung division for many years. This is the tool that I wish I'd had to settle all those subjective design decisions about advertising, packaging, and retail.
And I think I read that the expected accuracy is in the range of 97%.
Yeah, so we typically 95, 97%. And we do benchmarking on all of that. So some of the data we collect, we don't use for training. We use it for kind of benchmarking and validation. And if I was to show you the eye tracking results from a, you know, traditional eye tracking camera, the £20,000 camera, if I showed you the results from that with real people looking at it, and I showed you the results from iTrack, you would really struggle to know which is which.
This can't be overly good news for companies that do traditional eye tracking.
Well, we're focused on the pre-attentive vision, so the subconscious, the first few seconds. There's a whole field of eye tracking out there, which is beyond 3 seconds. So somebody that you want to do a usability test on your website or a ticket machine at a station, you're giving someone a task, you're giving them 45 seconds to do the task, and you want to see where they're looking on the screen. That kind of scenario, we're not trying to cover. You know, that's much more difficult. That's longer than 3 seconds. You can't really predict that stuff. So I think there's still a, you know, healthy market out there for those kind of longer term use cases. But what we've basically done is reverse engineer eye tracking, bringing it down to a price point that actually every designer can and should be using it. Whereas in the past, it's something that people have known about, but it's just never been within their budget or time frame.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, because I would imagine if it's $20,000, $25,000, whatever it may be, there's really only going to be the top brands are going to spend that kind of money. And this would, in theory, somewhat democratize the technology.
Yeah, and the camera is only half the story, because they have to go and recruit 40 or 50 people, do a telephone screening with them, check if they've got any strange eye defects or laser surgery that might affect the results. They have to bring them into a room. Somebody has to sit with them, calibrate the machine. 10% of the people, the results are not usable anyway. So as well as the cost of the hardware, there's the cost of rewarding the participants, recruiting them, managing them. So even if you had unlimited budget, you're still talking about, you know, 2-3 week process. There are some solutions out there that allow you to use a webcam to do some of the tracking, but the accuracy there is much, much, much lower. And you end up kind of rejecting half the participants because they're sitting in a badly lit room or they're not looking at their computer properly. So yeah, we like to think we've democratized it. And that was our goal really in setting this up, is we wanted to make this available to retailers, marketeers, and designers, like our startup team is made from.
Right. So if I have printed out a home campaign and I wanted to do a study on, you know, the materials that we've developed for it, what would it cost typically for that 2-3 week study with the recruitment and everything else?
So the figures we've been quoted when we've asked brands and retailers about this is $20,000-$30,000 upwards. Okay. Yeah, depending on how many people you want and how quickly you want it.
And to do it using iTrack would cost what? I know you have a couple of different ways of doing it.
Yeah, so we offer customers two options. One is a subscription, so they can subscribe to the iTrack tool. They can upload their images. They can do analyses, areas of interest. You know, they can handle it themselves. That's great. That's a subscription, and it's a price per image, which ranges anywhere from $50 an image down to $20 an image for larger packages, and as people use it more and more. So dramatically different price points. Mm-hmm. The other service we offer is something we call an iTrack Insight Report. So there's a number of big brands in the UK we're talking to at the moment, big telco brands. they really love this, but they're honest. They just don't have any bandwidth or skill set internally to use it themselves. So what they want to do is next time they have packaging for their new products and they've got three designs, they will send those to us, the images, the background, the context. We'll do all the analysis, and then we'll get one of our in-house retail experts to write up a presentation-ready report, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, suggestions, that they can just take straight back to their CMO and go, look, you know, we've had a full insight report done on this, predictive eye tracking, an expert looking at it. So those are the two ways that we offer it to people.
And to do that, is the demand on computers very, like, does this require a lot of processing power? Do you need a big data center to handle all this, or does it move pretty quickly?
No, because we've done all the heavy lifting on the front end with the neural network training. So when we've collected all of our eye tracking data, we then have, you know, a 4 or 5 week process where we're using some really heavy duty machine learning boxes to process all that data, you know, run through the neural network in like 138 million different iterations. But what comes out of that is an algorithm which we host on in the cloud. You know, the subscription service that you sign up to is cloud-based. Your image is uploading and it's being processed in the Amazon servers. And then the result is being sent back. You can actually do it on your iPhone or, you know, any smartphone or tablet because it's cloud-based. So if I'm standing in front of a storefront, I can take a picture of it on my phone. And within a minute, I've got back, you know, eye tracking results. And we know some fashion retailers who want to use this for their monthly merchandising meetings where they're designing store windows and they're setting up mannequins and drawing different combination of clothes. They're excited about being able to use it live in that meeting room to say, okay, well, actually, you know, option number three we just looked at is much more effective because of the color balance.
Wow. So this massively accelerates the whole process.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could make a big difference. I'm curious what works and what doesn't in terms of creative. I mean, I think we all have assumptions about what works, but I've looked through some of the case studies that you have and the different visuals for print, and what I would think would be effective isn't, and what I would think maybe wouldn't get noticed as much scores better. What's going on?
So we had a similar response ourselves when we started looking at the first results, when we had the first version last year, and we were going, this can't be right. You know, clearly that one's got a well-known model on it. That one surely should capture more attention. And that's where our computer vision and our machine learning guys are really good at going, no, look at this like the subconscious human brain does in those first couple of seconds. And the way visual saliency works, eye-catching work, it's the science of contrast. You know, so if you see a shelf full of red shoes, the white shoe will stand out. If you see a shelf full of white shoes, the red one will stand out. So contrast of colors, contrast of orientation, if something's a horizontal and one's kind of vertical, faces, text, you know, those are, our brains are kind of really wired to zoom in on those. So when you go through the creative, you start to see what your brain wasn't seeing before because you were being kind of too conscious thinking about the beauty and the balance of the design. And you start to see, you know, light yellow text on a white background, which is really low contrast and just doesn't stand out. And actually, if you forget the brand colors, forget the brand palette and make that high contrast, black text, nice thick font on a light background, there's better visual contrast and visual saliency, and that drives visual attention.
I wonder if there are creatives who are going to rail against this because they would say, well, this takes away from the creative process, and this is a version of SEO marketing where it's more important about getting certain elements in there than it is about having, you know, a great piece of copy, or in this case, a great visual.
Yeah. So we thought we were going to get more objections like that, actually quite few. And to those kind of people, we've said, look, this is a superpower we're giving you. It's not designing the creative, and you're never going to design creative by numbers. But this gives you a way of looking at your designs in context, in situ, to see if they're eye-catching, because unseen is unknown, unseen is unsold. It doesn't matter how award-winning your creative copy, messaging, strategic thinking is. If nobody sees that advert in the train station or nobody sees that packaging on the shelf, your work's kind of lost. So yeah. For those kind of people, it's, look, we just want to bring your work to the attention of people by kind of tweaking things. The other feedback we've had from designers is, yeah, I know this stuff, but it's the client that's the problem. It's the client that keeps saying they want these weird brand colors. And it's the client that keeps saying, make that bigger, make that smaller. And having been, you know, client side myself and agency side, yeah, I know that story from both sides. And, you know, I've been in a number of meetings where client side, I've had the creative and we know which is the right one. And some person will walk in with a random opinion based on Woolley's subjective language, or, you know, Hippo, the highest paid person's opinion kind of carries the day, because they walk in at the end and go, I don't like any of this, I want it to pop more, you know, all these kind of cliches. So now you can actually say to them, look, we did these three designs and we've put them in situ, we've taken Photoshop and we've put the advertising poster in situ on a frame, on a bus stop. We've taken the packaging and put it in situ at Best Buy, whatever it might be. We've run the analysis and we can show you with data points which one of these is visually more eye-catching. Now, that's only part of the story. You know, clearly it still has to be good creative and good copy and a good product and good price, et cetera, et cetera. But the starting point is, if nobody notices it, they're not going to consider it or be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
We're talking because I come out of the digital signage world and digital out of home. Right now, your product is more skewed to print and to packaging and so on, but I gather the plan is to get into motion-based digital media. That's correct?
Yeah, so at the moment, iTrack works on static images. So great for packaging, great for outdoor, which is static. It might be digital. So here in the UK, the outdoor digital advertising, you can't do kind of animated movies by the side of the road. So even though it is a digital screen, it's basically static creative. So those kind of scenarios we've got covered. The one that we have a good prototype for now and we need to get into production in the next couple of months is absolutely video. You know, digital signage in a store window. So if the front of my store looks like this and I've got a screen over here, and I've got three options for what the content of the screen is, being able to run those through iTrack, and iTrack will be able to say, well, actually, design, you know, video number one is actually the one that's going to capture most attention.
Is that a lot harder to do when you get into, you know, 30 frames a second?
Yeah, that's going to take more than a minute to do, because it basically needs to do frame by frame and then look at the movement of elements between frames, you know, if there's animation and movement that's eye-catching as well. So there's a whole bunch of kind of science and a couple of neural networks behind that. As I say, we've got a prototype of that working nicely. We just need to kind of get it into production. But that opens up another market again for us, which is, you know, video-based content, whether it's digital signage in a store window or it's banner, you know, animated banner ads on Amazon or Best Buy or, you know, news website, being able to pre-test all of those for visual impact is just super powerful.
Hmm. Is it something that is going to sit independent of creative tools, or is this the sort of thing that could almost be a plug-in into the Adobe suite or whatever tools are being used?
Yeah, so Adobe plugins, Sketch plugins, you know, we've built it in a way that we can do those quite easily. And as well as the designer tools, there's a number of kind of marketeer tools, less well-known kind of shopper marketing tools, where they have field sales teams out in the supermarkets taking photographs or taking photographs of advertising, you know, smaller proprietary tools and systems that we could do a kind of a custom API integration with to make it part of a, you know, store audit or store review type solution.
Mm-hmm. I was just at the National Retail Federation show in New York, and there were robotic tools in there that would, you know, go along aisles and do planogram studies and kind of analyze where the shelves, how they're stocked, how things line up, inventory levels, everything else. Is this the sort of thing that would also work for that?
Yeah, and we've talked before to SoftBank with Pepper, you know, because it's right. At the end of the day, it's an API call that we can create. And so if somebody has a robot tool that is going around the store at night and taking pictures, you know, it's quite easy for us to programmatically link that into iTrack, analyze the images, you know, and set up a benchmark or an index across different stores over time. So it's definitely possible for us. I think the bigger challenge there is those robot guys with their big expensive machines, getting them adopted at scale by retailers.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this as something that really anybody would, if they're being smart, they should use? If it's really only, you know, if it's less than $100 to test your creative, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's the hope. why wouldn't you? The worst thing is it comes back and goes, yep, it's all good. It's as good as you get it. One of the other things we're starting to do is, you know, build indexes. So for example, if you've got an image, a product image that you're going to load onto Amazon because you're selling a product, you want to know how visible that is compared to all the other product images. If you've got an Instagram image you're posting and you're going to do a sponsor, you know, a sponsored campaign because you're trying to do acquisition, again, you want to know how your image that you've got compares against all the other images for visual attention. So that's where we have indexes that we can, you know, we can take your Amazon product image, run it and compare it against a great big data set we've collected. And we can tell you, actually, your product image is an 8 out of 10. Or actually, compared to everyone else, it's a 4 out of 10. So that's our other things we're looking at, is trying to simplify it down. Yes, it's still predictive eye tracking, but simplify it in a way that gives context. So you give me your Instagram image and I tell you within the category of beauty and fashion, your image is a 9 out of 10. Or a 3 out of 10. So trying to kind of simplify it down to those kind of scores based on, you know, very large data sets that we've processed using iTrack.
Mm-hmm. I was curious, in your methodology, you have a creative design index, you were talking about indexes, campaign visibility, and frame visibility. And the frame visibility one was intriguing to me because it seems to suggest that certain, let's say, digital or printed street furniture posters on bus shelters and things like that, depending on their location, angle, and everything else, the visibility is better. How do you sort that out when people are coming at these posters from every which way, and you know, on a sidewalk or in a train station?
Yeah. So what we did in that study was we took a number of photographs of outdoor frames, bus shelters and things like that. And we took a number of photographs of indoor frames in a shopping center. And what we tried to do in each one was have the frame in about the middle distance, so not too far away, not too close, a little bit of a range. And we didn't want the frame dead center of the image because not everybody walks straight towards an advertising frame. And also we tried to match the most likely customer journey or customer approach. So much easier in a shopping center where, yep, I come up the escalator, I come off the top of the escalator, boom, it's there at 45 degrees on my left. A little more difficult for the outdoor, but, you know, there's still kind of, so there are some ways that people will look at it and there are some ways that they won't. So with all those different frames, we put in, you know, 20, we had 10 frames and we had 20 different outdoor advertising creative, and we put them all together into 200 combinations and analyzed all 200 combinations through iTrack. So we could say, right, actually, this frame here at the top of the escalator in the shopping center is not that great because look, right behind it is all the signage for the toilets, which is bright red. And downstairs, there was another one where, again, the background in a shopping center, visual clutter, visual noise, lots of distractions. The outdoor ones that we looked at, which were kind of bus shelters, so, you know, similar distance, pedestrian, people waiting. Some of those, the scene was quieter, calmer. There wasn't so much going on. Some of the scenes you had, you know, building works and signage and everything in the background. So that's why we did it across a range of them. And I think what I'd probably say in summary is, yeah, taking it as a standalone metric in a shopping center, those indoor frames, there's a lot more visual noise. However, it's the traffic, it's the foot traffic. That's the big variable.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working with a number of people now who have all the footfall traffic. So in the UK, there's 500,000 frames. They have the footfall traffic for all of those frames collected from mobile data. So they know how many people are going past each frame at different times of the day, different demographics. And they've always said this, you know, this is great. They use it for planning, but what, because they can predict the traffic, how busy a frame is, they've always been frustrated that they can't predict how visible a frame is. So this is where we come in with the visibility. And for an advertising campaign, we'd say, look, there's two things. One is the visibility of the frame and the creative. And the other is the foot traffic. You know, how many people are actually going to go past that frame in the first place?
So it's a contributing factor, but it wouldn't necessarily be a determining factor that, well, this shopping mall is visually noisy, so I won't even bother.
Yeah, it would be the same with if you're doing banner advertising. There might be website A has 10 times the traffic, 100 times the traffic of website B, but also website A is a lot more cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you want to be in the high traffic but slightly cluttered, or do you want to be in the low traffic, nice and clean?
Right. Where did all this come from? I know that you said you came out of Apple and some other companies. This is a startup, right? And it's based in three different cities?
Yeah, so the guy who kind of, so Mike McMillan, who's a New Zealand guy based in Hong Kong, he's been there for 20 years doing real cutting-edge computer vision. I connected with him about 10 years ago because I'd left Apple at that point, and he had some retail technology, tracking technology, that I said, Mike, if I'd known this 2 years ago, I would have installed this probably in, you know, 3,000 stores. So he had a business there doing retail analytics, which he sold about 2 years ago. And at that time, I was starting to look myself for kind of new startup kind of projects to get involved with. And I asked Mike what he was doing. And he showed me this kind of early prototype concept that he'd put together. And it was really from that, you know, it's like, okay, this is really clever. Technically, it's really clever. Is it useful? Is it commercially valuable? Or is this just a bit of clever technology? So I pulled together a number of different people, you know, from my retail marketing background, showed this to them. They're trying to get their head around and going, this is black magic. How does this work? Is this even possible? So we kind of quickly validated, okay, this actually, it is clever and it's also useful and there's commercial value. Now we need an AI machine learning expert. So an agency I've worked with before in Amsterdam, you know, they bring the digital expertise. They're also a digital production house, so they've done the machine learning and the back end and the front end. And then one of the other co-founders was the former chief merchandising officer for Hugo Boss. So we've got, you know, consumer electronics, fashion, apparel, FMCG, the retail, the marketing expertise mixed with the AI machine learning expertise mixed with the computer vision. And this is where, you know, we're excited about having this full stack AI startup, as we call it. And yeah, I'm in the UK, Mike's in New Zealand, Casper and Georgios are in Amsterdam with the dev team, Ralph is in Germany. And actually that works to our advantage because we've all worked together before. And, you know, we're covering different geographies and countries in terms of kind of sales and business development.
So the company's a little bit virtual? Like there's not like a main office?
No, we tend to get together. So the last year, kind of every 3 months, we've got together in Amsterdam and done like 3 or 4 days of just product roadmap, product brainstorming. But if you are really well organized with your work, actually, you know, Slack and Zoom and a bunch of other tools can just make you really efficient, even though you're virtual.
It keeps your overhead way down.
Yes, absolutely.
When will people be able to use this? Is it commercially available now?
Yep.
Okay.
People using it commercially. So we had version one kind of came out and was available last summer. And we've been, you know, through our own networks and connections of connections, presenting this to, you know, creative agencies, advertising agencies, retailers, brands. You know, 99.9% of the time, the response is just overwhelmingly, wow, you know, this is really clever. This is really useful. Cracky, this is a superpower tool that we've never seen before. How do we use this? How do we build this into a project with a client? How do we use this on as part of our store design process? How do we use this to validate our advertising campaigns? So the power and the credibility of the technology is a big tick. The use cases are a big tick. Now it's more people going, okay, you're giving me something that I've never had before, and you're allowing me to use this anywhere in my workflow. I can use it to go out and benchmark competitors and what they're doing because I just take pictures. I can use it during the design stage. I can use it after design to validate the work. So I think, you know, that's where a lot of people are, their head is at right now is, okay, there are so many ways to use this. Where do we start?
Mm-hmm. And the video side of it, when do you envision digital out-of-home network operators and creators who are producing motion graphics and so on, when will they be able to start applying the tool?
Yeah, so we've got kind of an early prototype we're going to start sharing with some of those people in the coming months.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, towards the middle of this year is when we'd like to have something, you know, a product there that we can be sharing with everyone.
You will have any number of out-of-home media companies passing through Amsterdam in a couple of weeks. Will you guys be showing stuff or be available in and around Integrated Systems Europe?
Yeah, we're not doing a booth or anything like that, but absolutely, that's one of the benefits of having a couple of our team out there. And, you know, even here in London, you know, a lot of the big media firms have their big presence here, so we're talking to those as well.
Right.
But yeah, so whether at an exhibition or in London or in Hong Kong or Munich or wherever, we're available.
Okay. So finally, if people want to find out more, how do they find you online?
Yep, itrack.co, so AITRAK.co.
The AI being the artificial intelligence part.
Exactly, yeah.
Very clever. I'm sure you were happy and relieved when you found that domain was available.
It's nice to be able to make up a word that's clean for IP and also makes sense for what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. David, thank you so much for your time.
No, you're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.